Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
A very significant update from AsiaMet Resources this week. The share price jumped by nearly 60% on the news of the sale of the KSK copper project in Indonesia. Here to tell us more about the details of that, Darren McLennan and Tony Menini, two of the senior directors at the company. Hello to you guys.
Morning, Alistair.
Yeah, hi, Alistair. How you doing? Good to be here.
Yeah, good to see you, Tony and Darren. Thanks for joining us. So tell us a little bit about this deal. How did it come about?
Yeah, maybe I'll kick off. So we completed the feasibility study, updated feasibility study for the BKM development earlier in the year. We have then progressed with a debt financing process with multiple banks. In terms of the overall project financing package, in addition to the debt, we also needed an equity component, and the debt financiers were looking for a greater degree of certainty around the equity, given that our AsiaMet was trading at a significant discount in the market to the NPV of the project and the overall value of the company. So we initiated, we appointed Grant Samuel, and Grant Samuel, who are a specialist boutique advisory, M&A advisory here in Australia and Asia, to undertake a process to secure the equity piece for the development of BKM. And we started that process really as a process to find a development partner, so an investor and development partner for the equity piece of the project to go together with the debt piece as part of the financing package. So that's how it started, Alistair. We effectively then ran a standard M&A process. We initiated that, as I said, on the basis of finding a development partner, but as part of that, we remained open to other structures and offers that, you know, may offer a value proposition that we would also consider. So we received interest from, you know, from multiple parties, and we ran a standard two-phased M&A process, which included receiving non-binding bids in the first phase, detailed due diligence, site visits, and extensive commercial negotiations with the multiple parties. The majority of the interest, I can openly say, was from two primary jurisdictions, and that was Indonesia itself and also China. China being a big investor in resources sector in Indonesia. So we ran that process. There were multiple bidders, as I said, in the first phase. We narrowed that down to into phase two with a smaller number of parties who the offers that they put forward in phase one were offers that made sense or potentially made sense from a valuation perspective and a deal structuring perspective. So we took that small number of parties through the full detailed diligence data room and negotiations, and we asked bidders to put in a binding offer around the end of the month, and we received those offers around the end of the month. So that was the process that we went through, Alistair. We received offers for various structures, but overwhelmingly the most interest and the best from a valuation and deal certainty perspective were from parties that were seeking control or a whole of asset transaction deal. So that's really where it came from. Of course, we then evaluated all those offers very seriously based on the merits of each of them, valuations and conditions. And then after, carefully evaluating each of those offers, assessing the development risks and timeframes that we still had in front of us, looking at the valuations from a discounted cash flow NPV perspective, market comps, transaction comps, and all other types of sort of valuation metrics or typical valuation metrics, we concluded that the deal that was presented by Noran Mining was the preferred deal for us when all things were considered, including the certainty of the deal getting done and completed.
So it sounds like you ran a pretty competitive process there. I mean, you mentioned a few of the valuation factors, Tony, but how did you guys sort of end up with the final valuation that we now see in the announcement, $105 million US dollars? What's the what are the factors behind arriving at that number?
Well, I guess firstly, it's as I said just before. So we had a framework which we had an NPV valuation on the project from the work that Darren had completed in the feasibility study. So we had an NPV on the project of $122 million at $4.30 copper price, at $4.50. $4.52 actually, copper price, the NPV rose to $142 million. What were companies with the similar profile to our project, our company, our situation? What sort of comps were in the market and how were they trading at what sort of values? And likewise, recent transaction comps. So we looked at a range of recent transaction comps over the past, probably the past 12 months, a couple a bit further back than that. And then we assessed the valuation based around those. But the primary marker was really looking at the NPV. So if you look at where 105 million lies, it represents about 90% of the NPV of the project at $4.30 copper and around 74.5% at $4.52 copper. So really, that's where, I mean, typically, these types of transactions would be done at significantly greater discounts to the NPV than that. But clearly there's quite significant upside still in the KSK project from other pieces, BKZ, the exploration potential, et cetera, that were assessed by the parties. And hence the valuation is actually getting up quite close to the NPV of the project. So when you think about that, you say, okay, well, we still have to build the project, we have to still got to put all the finance together. We still have to build the project. There's not insignificant risk in all of that. And we have a counterparty who is prepared to pay us between, depending on the price that you use, between 75% and 90% of that value today without us taking those risks. So that's really, really where the value markers came from and how we assess them.
Darren, perhaps I can address my next question to you in two
Sure.
parts. Who is the buyer, Noran Mining, and why did you guys decide that an outright sale was a better way forward with them than a joint venture?
Yeah, sure, Alistair. So Noran Mining, it's an international mining firm. All their projects are outside mainland China. So they're a producer, substantial producer of copper and cobalt. Both of their producing assets are in the DRC. One of those assets is large. It's going through a second phase of expansion now, but they're producing circa 100,000 tons of copper cathode, 10,000 tons of cobalt, I think cobalt sulfate. So they're a substantial player there. Substantial revenues from those activities. They're currently running a feasibility study in Zimbabwe on a PGMs project, and they have exploration efforts a bit further north in Sudan and also in Saudi Arabia. So, a substantial business, substantial player, and very keen to, they're very keen on exploration, very keen on doing early work and advancing projects, from that perspective. It was one of the reasons they liked, they certainly liked KSK. There is substantial exploration upside across the contract of work. So I think that was a substantial factor. But yeah, they're a good, a good technical fit. They have, they do have good capabilities in the copper space. They even use sort of engineering partners that we've used in our project as well. Bigram, the Chinese partner, they've worked with them previously on their projects in the DRC. So I think, yeah, they're a good technical fit for us. And I think also, as we're engaging, having engaged with them substantially over the course of the DD process, a good values fit. They do have a strong sort of ESG component to the work they do. They are very, very conscious of the strong ES, well, the strong certainly social, the social capital that we have within the KSK project for our from our long-term work with the community there. They found that as very, a very strong asset that we have as part of the business. And they see the strengths in that, from their experience in working in the DRC and working with communities there. So, I think we found them to be a good partner, very thorough, very thorough in their work. The due diligence process was extensive, and I think it's came to a really positive conclusion. In terms of partnering versus an outright sale, again, it's their, I guess it's their desire to have control of the asset, which is not uncommon for groups in this situation. So they were keen to have control of the asset and felt the best way for them to take it forward was to have it 100% within the Noren Mining Group. And they're able to to take the project forward and not necessarily have to work with a partner and necessarily a partner sort of on the public markets as well. So they're keen to take it forward in a way, in a structured way, and in a way that they can see is a right fit for them as the business. So.
Would you characterize them as a large company, then, Darren, a large mining company?
Yeah, I mean, you put some numbers, just the numbers around their production rates, 100,000 tons of copper cathode, 10,000 tons of contained cobalt. That's a substantial business. There's substantial revenues from that, and a growth pipeline in sort of the MENA region, in sort of sorry, in Saudi Arabia and sort of the southern parts of Africa. That's a obviously an area of jurisdiction that they've grown comfortable with, but now they want to look at building a substantial business here in Indonesia. They like Indonesia as a path forward for building out, Noren mining here in the Asia or sort of in the Asia Pacific region. And seeing this country, where we are, and this is a really good starting project for them. Not biting off something too big. This is a good entry into the mining space here, and a good platform for them to be able to develop further.
And they're able to pay cash,
Correct. Yes.
which is
That's
great, isn't
a
it?
good thing. That is certainly a good thing. Yeah.
Now, tell us a little bit about the timing of this transaction. I believe you guys are expecting it to wrap up fairly quickly, although there is a 9-month sort of long stop date, but you're expecting it to be done significantly before then.
Yeah, there are some conditions. I'll say a couple of words, and Tony probably have a few comments after me. But yeah, there's conditions precedent with as is typical of a transaction of this nature. Where there is some time that's needed to be able to close those out. But yeah, we're certainly confident that we can achieve what we need to definitely within that. Well, shorter than the 9 months time frame, but yeah, that's still a reasonable long stop date, with respect to a contract and agreement of this nature.
Yeah, look, I mean, I just add to that. I mean, as Darren said, I mean, the 9 months long stop date is, that's the maximum time allowed to complete the transaction. I mean, both the parties are highly motivated to actually progress the CPs. And as Darren said, CPs are normal for a transaction of this type. So we just need to close out those conditions precedent as quickly as we can, and then get the deal completed shortly thereafter. So given the motivation of both the parties, given the CPs that need to be closed out, we think that, we'll be able to do that a lot shorter than 9 months. In fact, we'd like to think that we can get that done in a fraction of that time.
So you're planning to return a significant amount of the proceeds from this sale to shareholders, according to the news release. Can you say a bit more about that? Like how much, or what your plans for the funds that Norin are going to deliver to you guys are?
Yeah, so obviously we've been running this process pretty well flat out. We've only just closed, so we're only just signed the sales and purchase agreement with Norin yesterday, as I was saying. We still have Bootong, and we're still progressing Bootong. So the intention really is to, A, we've got to close this transaction and firstly get the funds in, and that will only happen after all the CPs are completed, as we just said. Once that happens, we'll continue to advance Bootong. I think, it's fair to say that we've had quite a significant amount of interest in Bootong as well, and we've said that, multiple times in multiple forums previously, and that continues to be the case. There is a bit more complexity around Bootong, given it sits in a semi-autonomous province, and is a much, much bigger project. So the KSK project was a project that was of a scale that Asia Met felt was a good, a circa $200 million CapEx, or $185 million CapEx project was something that was manageable. Bootong would be a very substantially bigger project than that. So, we will need to engage with other parties to take that forward. Our expectation is that we would like to get a partner in to predominantly fund Bootong, so that from an Asia Met perspective, we don't have significant ongoing outgoings in terms of funding, and someone else would be funding that. And in that case, we would be in a position to return, a substantial amount of the proceeds of this $105 million back to the shareholders as a special dividend. That's the thinking at this time.
So what can we expect to happen now then? Will there be further news on this sales process for KSK in the coming weeks and months?
I'll just say a couple of things, Alistair. There's a bit of news. Well, there's some news flow around some activities which we're still progressing, various regulatory activities, things that we need to progress. We may not be sort of going into the detailed project development, but there's a range of things that are still important for us to do, and that are important for us as we progress the working on the conditions that we need to for the sale. So there's potential for some news flow around that as we're able to complete some of these activities.
Yeah, and I think there is, as I said, there's CPs to be closed off. And there's various other regulatory milestones that Darren just alluded to getting through, which are some of which are part of the CPs. So we'll progress those. So there'll be news there. And as I said, we've still got Bootong, and we'll be advancing Bootong. We need to, so that we expect that there'll be further news around that. So we need to keep shareholders. Obviously, this is a big transaction. It's only just completed, and we'll need to keep shareholders, informed of exactly sort of where we are, what's going on, as all of this unfolds over the next few months.
So exciting times for you guys. Just to wrap it up then, perhaps I could ask you both just to give a quick couple of words on where you think the copper price is going to go, because we've had some mixed messages in the market over the last few weeks. Goldman Sachs saying one thing and some of the other banks saying a couple of other things, and obviously you guys know a lot about copper. Any words, Darren? I'll start with you.
I'd like to say I'm still a copper I'm still a copper bull, Alistair. I think the future remains bright. I mean, there's obviously, some talks about potentially some recessions in other areas and some things that might impact on the demand side. But I think the demand side is still there. I mean, a lot of aspects around the electrification theme, the data centers, the things on the demand side are still strong. And I think on the supply side, I mean, obviously here in Indonesia, we've had a bit of a supply shocker with Indonesia's largest copper mine in Grasberg, having the unfortunate incident that it had some months ago, and some talk about that coming back online, relatively soon. But it's taken some copper units out of the market, and I think it'll take a little while for that to work its way through as well. So I think generally speaking, a level now we're sitting at what 480, around that sort of 480, 490 seems reasonable, but I'm still pretty bullish on where it's going to be longer term.
Any thoughts to close us out, Tony?
I know, as Darren said, I mean, the fundamentals look solid. I always find it a bit amusing when everybody's wondering where the copper price is going to go. It was only 3 years ago we were dreaming it was going to be $3.50, and now it's $5 or close to, and everybody's wondering how much further. If you can't make a lot of money in copper mining at these prices, then you shouldn't be in copper mining. So I think this is a good, robust price. If it holds this price, then everyone who's in the copper business should be happy.
Darren, Tony, congratulations on the transaction. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Alistair.
Alistair.
Appreciate
Much
it.
Appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.